I would say if you thought the activity part was cool when you put in tech, the rumination really, I think, is bringing what brings the technology to another level. The stuff that you can do with cow management with rumination is pretty fantastic. And I would never farm probably without it. I think my dad would say that of anything he's ever purchased in his dairy career, the rumination tags were like by far the best investment. I remember him like saying that and stuff. I mean, it really does bring your dairy to the next level. And we use it a lot both on like large group management, but we'll also use it often on individual cow management. And what it does, I think it just lets cows be cows. And like, mm-hmm. That's the key for us.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Hi-D from DSM Firmenich optimizes vitamin D levels to increase milk yield, enhance calcium to phosphorus ratio, and strengthen immunity. With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, SmaxTech future-proofs your dairy operation. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Adiseo USA, producers of SmartAmine M and MilkPay.com. More milk and higher conception rates. Contact AHV to take uterine health to the next level. Lallemand Animal Nutrition, partnering in microbial solutions for a changing world.
All right. Well, welcome everyone to this episode of the Dairy Podcast Show. I'm your host for today, Gail Carpenter. I'm joined by Dr. Megan Schrupp. Megan is a veterinarian and owner of Next Gen Dairy, a family-owned dairy farm in Eden Valley, Minnesota. She graduated from the University of Minnesota College of Vet Med in 2011 and initially practiced dairy medicine for over 2 years. Since 2016, she has co-owned and managed Next Gen Dairy, overseeing herd health, reproduction, and milking operations while leading a team of full and part-time employees. In addition to her role at Next Gen Dairy, Megan operates Dairy Performance Service LLC, providing veterinary consulting and care across various dairy farms in central Minnesota. Megan and her husband, Tim, are recognized for their active involvement in the dairy industry locally and nationally, including leadership roles within the Young Cooperator Program and their regional cooperative. They advocate for dairy farmers through legislative engagement and dairy industry leadership. Next Gen Dairy, under Megan's leadership, incorporates sustainable practices such as solar energy and is known for high standards in animal welfare, productivity, and longevity, with a herd of about 1,200 Jersey cows. Her vision of success integrates profitability with creating a positive workplace and community impact, striving for herd health and longevity through a balance of data-driven and science-based management practices. Welcome to the podcast, Megan.
Thank you for having me.
That is quite a career. But fun fact, I think we overlapped briefly at the University of Minnesota. So I started my master's there in 2010. So I was over in Hacker Hall. So we probably didn't directly interact too much, but yeah, we were both in St. Paul at the same time.
You were just across the street from where I was, head down, trying to cram all things veterinary medicine.
That's right, because fourth year is not fun. Actually, is any year of vet school fun?
Yeah, they're all very busy, very busy. But I have to say, I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. And I think the older I get, the more I look back and think, you know, it is such a wonderful time. You really do learn so many things, and it's amazing how you grow through that process.
Yes, it's kind of, I have the opportunity to watch it firsthand with my students. I get them in undergrad, but I stay pretty involved with a couple of the classes over at the vet school. So I teach a lecture in one of their dairy production rotations, and then I get invited to speak at the ruminant nutrition class. And so I get to see some of the undergrads, like, as they've been through a couple years of vet school. And it's so fun. Like, even from freshman to senior year of college, watching them grow is so, so fun, so rewarding. They're just, like, whole new people by the time they graduate. And then to go into vet school or grad school or wherever else, it's just, like, those early 20s are such a time for development for young people. So
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Exciting.
And did you do your undergrad at Minnesota too, or?
I did. Yes.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. And fun fact, I guess I actually started my college career in undergrad pursuing meteorology. So
what?
Yeah, I wanted to be a meteorologist forever. And my dad always thought I would be a good large animal vet. And
yeah.
After I started college, I I came to the conclusion that cows are actually pretty cool and farming is pretty actually awesome. There's so much you can do with it. The opportunities are pretty much endless for any sort of area that one has, a passion for, anything from milk quality to nutrition to people management. I mean, now we're diving into like technology and computer systems. Like, you know, never did I think that, you know, I would be wearing so many hats or be exposed to so many different things. So it's really fun. And I think that's one of the challenges I would pose to the industry is communicating all of these opportunities that we have in our industry to the young people of today, because I think there's so much information and so much precision and, forward thinking and information, and how do we communicate the opportunities in all these various fields that we rely on in our dairies to these young people, you know, showing them all these various career opportunities. I think that's one of the challenges we probably have today, to get young people to come back to the dairy industry and be excited and join us. So
did you grow up with a dairy background then? Did you grow up on a farm or?
Yeah, I actually grew up on the farm that I co-own now with my husband. So I'm fourth generation. He would be fifth generation. We purchased the last of his family's cattle and kind of brought them into our herd. And those would be Guernsey cattle. So we dip our toe a little bit into showing some Guernsey genetics, because that would be my husband's family's legacy. We have fun with his nieces on that end. But my family, I grew up on just a commercial dairy, Holsteins actually, and we've since transitioned the dairy to Jersey. So because our milk is producing cheddar cheese here in central Minnesota.
That's kind of, some people would think those are fighting words right there. What was that transition like going from Holsteins to Jerseys?
I think for us, and just kind of some dynamics of our dairy, it's been pretty natural. Our facility is nearing 25 years old. We're pretty close to city limits with some zoning and things like that. So there's some different things to think about with animal size and animal units and some things like that. And then the nature of, you know, what we're producing with our milk and how it's being processed. It seemed like for us, transition at the time, you know, really when we started too, we started probably 12 years ago with that process. So, I mean, at that time is kind of when we decided to. And now I think the Holstein breed, we're seeing the components, right? The pounds of fat and protein sold on these Holsteins with genetic progress is actually pretty incredible. So
yeah,
it's just amazing to see that journey over the last 12 years within the industry. You know, when you start talking about, you know, components and Holsteins and genetics and Jerseys. Yeah, it's pretty incredible. So, but that's a path we're on.
So did you just start breeding to Jersey semen, or did you buy in any animals or embryos, or how did you guys go about
doing that? We actually expanded our dairies at that time. And so we had purchased a whole bunch of Holstein Jersey cross cattle, and they came with some purebred Jersey cattle. So in the expansion process, we kind of purchased some of those cattle. And then after having them for 5-6 years, we just kept breeding to Jersey as well. So we do still milk Holstein cattle. One of the foundations for our herd and one of our goals is to milk older cows. Longevity and health are important to us. So we still milk some Holstein cattle. And we have a whole bunch of Holstein Jersey crosses that are just terminal crosses that are being bred beef. But the majority of the herd is now Jersey, and all of the heifers returning into the herd are purebred Jersey, like not registered, but in essence, purebred Jersey heifers.
So you're pretty familiar with both breeds.
Yes. Yep.
The Guernseys are fun. That's, I like that. They're the Golden Guernseys. It's kind of a niche thing, right?
Yeah, it is. It's fun. You definitely get to understand firsthand breed characteristics, and they are very different, each one.
That is fair. I don't have a lot of experience with Guernseys personally, but we have some Ayrshires at home and have had a few brown Swiss kicking around occasionally. So they do bring some spice.
Yes.
Struggling with post-calving challenges and reproductive performance? Don't wait for problems. Protect uterine health proactively. AHV offers natural science-backed solutions and tailored on-farm support, improving fertility and performance. Learn more at ahvint.com.
Well, let's talk about fresh cows. Talk to me a little bit about how are you managing your fresh cows? What are your fresh cow protocols? Just talk to me broadly about what you're doing with fresh cows on your dairy farm.
Starting off with fresh cows, probably for me, the fresh cows are very critical to our dairy. They're one of our most important groups of cattle that we focus on. And perhaps for me, that was an easy fit being a veterinarian. You know, when you work in practice, a lot of, especially here in central Minnesota, I worked for 2 years for, you know, a practice had a wide variety of farms. But as a vet, a lot of the cattle you focus on are, right, fresh cows. You help producers either look at a fresh cow putting out a fire, or maybe help a team of employees for a producer, you know, implement protocols and treatments and that sort of thing for fresh cows. So coming back home to the dairy, for me, fresh cows was an obvious and easy fit. It's probably just a natural fit for me to focus on. And for me also, I just think the whole key for our cows is to focus on the first few days in lactation, right? So our goal when we think about fresh cows on our dairy is we are setting the stage for success. And so we really want to focus on those first few days to get those cows off to as best start as possible. So I think, and you'll see it like in my veterinary practice name, it's dairy performance service, because I believe that cows are athletes. I mean, you see that on the nutrition side. It's amazing how balanced and honed in we have their nutrition, right? So we can set the whole lactation curve. And I would equal that and add to that, that is what fresh cow care is about setting the stage for the whole lactation curve, right? So we want to get these athletes coming right out of the gate. I think of it, picture it as a racehorse coming out of the gates at a racetrack. The genetics that we have today and how we've bred these cattle are just, it's unbelievable what they really can do. But oftentimes what our limitation is in the dairy industry is management, right? The genetics are there. We can get feed there, but like it's the management. So how do we manage our fresh cows? Or when I look at that with my team, or what are we doing in the first few bits to set these cows up? So right after they calve, they're like a racehorse coming out of the gate, and we can maximize our peak production, maximize our genetics and health over the whole lactation curve. So I kind of think of it as the whole lactation by focusing on the front end of fresh cows. And when you get into that, then you can start looking into, well, it's maybe not just the first 3 days, right? So we're moving beyond looking at, okay, then what does the pre-fresh pen look like, right? So you start like adding all these kind of little areas, but the whole key in mind is getting the cows calved in and taking off, right? So all of the things that would factor into that.
I always say when I'm teaching like introduction to dairy nutrition, I say that cow in peak performance is the metabolic equivalent of running a marathon every single
yes.
day, right? And they have to go from basically like on maternity leave in the dry cow pen to all of that metabolic output. And it is we call it the transition period for a reason, right? Like
yeah.
that's what's happening.
So, yes.
Yeah. I also like your comments about genetics. I was at a conference last week and somebody said, if genetics is the ceiling and nutrition is the floor. And then I said, but even like nutrition is built on management, right? Like management's the foundation, because you can't outfeed bad management either.
Mm-hmm.
So you need, I like those comments that it's not just about that time around calving. It's about that whole system and what you're, how you're managing them at every step of the way.
100%. 100%. And a lot of times too, we got to sit and think about like, you know, there's so much that goes into managing these cows and protocols and stuff. But a lot of times we need to figure out like, okay, what is our biggest single limitation, right? So with management of fresh cows, we think of on the dairy of two things that I always try to keep in mind. One is our biggest limitation oftentimes on any dairy is time, right? So time with my employees have, management time that I have, time, the time that the cows have, how are they spending their time? I try to keep time in the back of my mind. And then I try to keep in back of my mind always a mentor of mine going to the University of Minnesota was Dr. John Fetro. And he has always talked about bottlenecks, right? So what is the biggest limitation to our success, right? So we could go through a lot of different things that we can all implement, right? But we need to figure out too, what is the biggest limitation? Like, what is the biggest bottleneck, and solve that first. So then do the second one, right? So we try to always figure out those two things. And that's kind of where the fun is, right? Working with a team and figuring that out.
I like that. I like that framing of bottlenecks. I read a book a while ago. It's called Quit, actually. Not the sexiest title, but one of the things she talked about in the book was, if you have to train a monkey to juggle while balancing on a pedestal, your natural instinct is probably to build the pedestal first. But really the thing that's going to hold you back is if you can never teach the monkey how to juggle, right? So it's kind of like, what is the thing that's going to hold us back? And sometimes there's low hanging fruit that might be distracting from what the actual like biggest impact things are.
Exactly. It's easy to add a product, or it's easy to buy something, mm-hmm. right? And it doesn't even matter if the cows are being locked for 2 hours because they all got to get fresh cow exams, right?
Right.
So it's like, we got to figure out, you know, what is the bottleneck that needs to be resolved first? Then maybe it's the fresh cows, or then maybe it's the thing, right?
One of the things we want to talk about today is technology and how we can use technology to measure fresh cows. I know you mentioned all those lockups, right? I know technology, some of these technologies make it really easy that we can avoid doing some of that and not having cows locked up as long, or not needing to be as hands-on because we have some of these technologies available. So how are you using technology to be able to manage your fresh cows?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've had tech in our dairy since 2010. And in 2010, we put in individual cow sensors for heat detection in our heifers. That's kind of how it started. And then cow ID, heat detection in the cow herd, cow ID in the parlor, individual milk weights, that sort of thing. In 2018, I really wanted to go to the next level, and I really wanted rumination. So in 2018, we put in some ear tags to do rumination as well as heat detection. And then in 2021, I believe, we decided to upgrade that system to NEDAPS collars. So we have rumination, activity, individual ID in the parlor, and then we would have breathing by pen and a positioning if we were to install and use it. But I would say, if you thought the activity part was cool when you put in tech, the rumination really, I think, is what brings the technology to another level. The stuff that you can do with cow management with rumination is pretty fantastic. And I would never farm probably without it. I think my dad would say that of anything he's ever purchased in his dairy career, the rumination tags were like by far the best investment. I remember him like saying that and stuff. I mean, it really does bring your dairy to the next level. And we use it a lot both on like large group management, but we'll also use it often on individual cow management. And what it does, I think it just lets cows be cows. And like, mm-hmm. that's the key for us, is like getting out of the pen, leaving them alone. Don't bother the cows. I mean, think about that time commitment that they have. Like, they only have so many hours a day. They need to eat, drink water, and they need to go lay down, right? Milk and lay down. So like every time we're in the pen, we get a cow up. Well, she would have laid down had we not been in the pen. And if we get them up and we're locking them doing exams, like, okay, that's less time she's laying down, or less time she's doing this, right? So, and especially those cows after they calve, I mean, they're coming into milk production. They're metabolically like just trying to get things figured out. Those cows really just need to be left alone. And so that's kind of what the data does for us, is just like an eye on the cows 24/7, like, and we just gets us out of the pens and lets cows just leave alone. So, basically like if a cow never flags on the data, we never touch her. Like, we never bother her. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we don't lock.
That's such an overlook. I think maybe overlook's wrong, because I think a lot of people are catching on to this, that like you want to have control over the fresh cows, right? For a long time, we were like, yes, let's be checking these cows. Let's be really proactive with like getting, like doing exams and all this. And but you can be too hands-on. Mm-hmm. And so that's really, I think, the beauty of a lot of these technologies is that you can still have that same level of control. You can still be monitoring everything that you want to monitor and make sure that you're there when a cow needs you to be, but not without having to be physically locking her up, physically manipulating her. I never had kids or haven't had kids yet, but I have had friends who have had kids. And I know right after you have a baby, you don't want to go to a doctor's appointment every single day, right? You want to be able to just like chill out for a little while. And I think we forget that when it comes to, not that we're trying to do harm by doing this, but I think sometimes out of an abundance of wanting to do the right thing, we might actually do more harm than good.
Well, and I would argue too, like, so in practice, you know, years ago in vet school, we were taught to do a fresh cow exam, right? Check temperature and for ketosis and, you know, all the things, right? Do the full exam. What I would argue that if her eating time is good, do we even care if she has ketosis? And I think there's some research coming out now on that, that it's maybe okay that these cows are ketotic, right? Before we were doing this whole exam to try to find these ketotic cows, and then we were doing all the things, right? Because they had ketosis. But now that I have the data, right? And I can see that her eating minutes, right? So when we look at our fresh cows, I don't use rumination. I actually use eating time because I like to see like how many minutes are cows actually intaking feed? Is feed going in, right? Because if feed's going in and the nutrition is right and the ration is mixed right, they should ruminate, right? So if that's what we actually use eating time. We use the change in eating time from today, from yesterday. And is it increasing and what level is it at? And if that's fine, like, I don't really care if she has ketosis. I could care less. Yeah. But if the eating minutes change for a little bit, okay, then maybe then that's the time where the cow is telling me, okay, then we intervene, right? Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I think that's a big difference too. Like, we don't temp, I don't even temp a fresh cow ever unless her eating minutes are not good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and same thing too, like day two, like day one, where was she eating? Day two, post calving. And when we do look at NeedApp software, it's pretty neat. It gives you like a daily graph of like a line graph, but also on the bottom of the page, there's like I think it's a 48-hour bar. It's like a line bar, and you can see like real time, like at 2 a.m., the 8, and that what they're doing is color coded. So like eating would be like a dark blue, ruminating is light blue, lying is gray, whatever. So you can see when you see eating at 2 a.m., she ate, but it'll stay blue till she changed to a different activity, and then the color will change. So not only do we first few days of calving, do we look at eating minutes, but we look at length of eating bouts. Mm-hmm. So did a cow go and ate, she had these really nice long eating bouts. That's fantastic. Or are we getting this where she went to the bunk and she ate like two nibbles and went and laid down and then went to the bunk, ate two nibbles. I mean, that's where we're looking for variation in that. And then working on that to maximize fresh cows, if that makes sense.
I'd like to pick your brain about this a little bit more because I've dabbled in some feeding behavior stuff. And one of the things that we know is that eating time, minutes eating can be based on a lot of different things. Some of those include how often feed's pushed up, stocking density. So if you're overstocked, you might have some cows that are eating for a long time and others that aren't. And the other thing is sorting. So cows that do more sorting have more eating time than cows that don't. So I'm coming in like, you know, from having to, you know, me up in my ivory tower, writing papers and doing some of this, you know, controlled data collection, but you're coming at it from the, okay, this is what I do every day, like boots on the ground. So how does that look in practice? Like what do you keep the stocking density of your fresh cow pen? What are you doing to control sorting? How often are you pushing up feed? Go.
Yeah. No, that is a great, great point because I think what we have to remember, like, even though we have this new tech, right? There's a lot of foundational basics. Like, we have to remember that there is a lot of foundational practices that were created for a reason. We do not overstock our fresh pen. So we have a second hospital parlor where we milk treated cows, fresh cows. It's a small group. They go there after calving, and then we move them out of there to their herd pen. So they get one move when they calve, second move to herd pen, then they're in herd pen till they dry. So we minimize moves, right? We do not overstock the fresh pen. So we have a certain amount of stalls. Maybe if it's extreme, we stock one or two stalls over. And we have no headlocks. We just have a rail. So that aids us a little bit. But we have stalls. So we do stocking destiny so everybody can lay down in the fresh pen in the evening. Feed pushed up. You know, that pen there is kind of in the central hub of the dairy. So that feed and that pen is really watched. We actually will top dress hay during the middle of the day on that pen. So we feed a TMR and then we actually buy really nice soft alfalfa hay just for the hospital cows. And when the pen is cleaned, I mean, the pen's cleaned three times a day when they milk, but during the middle of the day, we milk that pen twice, but the pens are cleaned three times a day with the front parlor routine, if that makes sense. Those cows have to get up in the middle of the day. It's a great time. We push every cow to the bunk and we top dress grass hay. So everybody gets pushed. So nobody, like all 12 hours, they could lay all night, right? But during the day, they can't lay in their stall. If they feel like crap, they can't lay in their stall all day. Like somebody goes and gets every cow up and pushes them to the bunk. And then you watch them there eat too. So, but that little bit of hay really makes a difference. But yeah, we can't remember. We can't forget those basics. Like you cannot... You know, eating time and the tech will be great. Yeah. But like we talk about bottlenecks, right? Like overstocking your fresh pen is probably a big bottleneck, right? Especially if you have a whole boatload of mature cows and you're throwing in fresh heifers or, absolutely, you know, stuff like that, or mixing your feed and not having enough fiber length on there too, like 100%. Or, and as soon as a mature cow is eating well, she could be 2 days fresh or 3 days fresh, and she is taking off like a rocket ship out of the pen, because those are the cows that will run around and push on the cows that aren't feeling well or need a little bit more care. So it's a little bit more of a management. It takes more management, but like I said, we kind of keep it in the central hub of the dairy, and knowing that that is kind of the center of our focus, because we want every cow, as much as we can, every cow to take off as best that that cow can.
I really appreciate, I know that some people don't agree with the top dressing hay because of, you know, it's rumen fill and whatever. I personally am a big fan. Worked for a dairy that as soon as a cow wasn't feeling very good, just give them, put a little bit of grass hay on top, right? It's, you know, it buffers, it gets them chewing. I think 100%. It really helps settle them. Yeah.
Yeah. And I have to, you know, so much too. I think, as I mean, we're farmers, we're caretakers, right? Where it's husbandry. We know cattle as farmers, we, and veterinarians, like you're in the pen and you know cattle, you work with them every day. There's something too, I think, about some fresh cows. I think they get depressed, and I think there's something, cows love eating grass and long stem hay. I think there's something to that, you know. Science is great at a lot of things, but sometimes I think there's some things we can't quite measure too. So
that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
And to the discussion about technology, we're getting better at measuring those things all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, sometimes there's vibes, right? Mm-hmm. You got to follow the vibes a little bit. Yeah. I also appreciate your comments about the mature cows and getting those, you know, I love the invisible cow, right? The cow that you never have to, you see her when she calves, you see her when she breeds, you see her at preg check, and then you see her again when you dry her off.
Yes.
But those cows, especially the mature ones, they know what they're doing. And the heifers, I think this is a bottleneck on a lot of dairies, is if you're commingling heifers and mature cows, you really have to pay attention to your stocking density. You really have to pay attention to making sure that those, it's kind of like, you know, when I'm moderating meetings, or doing any sort of like discussion led event, right? You have to make sure the introverts have a chance to say, because there's going to be some voices in the room that are going to talk a lot. And there's going to be some voices in the room that do have things to say, but they're not going to be comfortable speaking up. And I feel like that's our mature cows and our heifers in a lot of ways. So making sure that you're kind of managing some of those social dynamics, I think, is incredibly crucial when it comes to fresh cow management.
I agree 100%. And I think that's a great way that you put it.
Yeah.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Your partner for extra animal performance, Bergenschmidt Animal Nutrition. Our Yeast 40, ruminal and intestinal double modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Accurately measure individual cow feed efficiency with the newest advancement from AffiMilk. Visit AffiMilk.com to learn more. That's AffiMilk.com. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Exalit, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Evonik Animal Nutrition, sciencing the global food challenges. Natural Biologics is using cutting-edge science to deliver cost-effective solutions for the animal health and productivity challenges you face. For conventional or organic production systems, Natural Biologics can help support rumen health and immune function, mitigate pathogens, and increase production efficiency. Visit naturalbiologics.com to learn more.
Well, unfortunately, I'm really enjoying this conversation, but it looks like we're getting towards the end of our time to chat. So do you want any last words, any last bits of wisdom that you want to share with our audience? Or if they want to find out more information about your dairy or what the stuff that you're working on, is there anywhere that they can find more information about you or your veterinary practice as well?
Yeah, I guess you could probably reach out to me. I guess I'm a little old school. Facebook, Instagram. I don't have a LinkedIn. I'm just kind of on the dairy, or it's such a small community as well. People usually know somebody that knows somebody to get a hold of me as well if anybody had questions or wanted to know more. But I just think that where we're going with the industry, with the tech that's coming out, and there's some new things coming on the pipeline and what we're able to do, I think that, you know, look out, dairy coming here in the next 20 years, we're going to really be able to do some interesting things, some really cool stuff. I'm really excited too for new and more nutrition research. I think that's exciting as well. There's always so much coming out with, you know, nutrition, inflammation, health, and intersecting that with data and technology, I think is going to be really, really fun. So I'm excited for that.
I do. I have also been informed that Facebook is for old people, but yeah. It's fine.
That's what my nieces and nephews tell me. They're like, nobody's on Facebook anymore. Well, I guess I'm still there. So
yeah. You and I are still on there. So, all right. So with that, we will go ahead and ask our three questions that all of our guests get asked. And the first one is, what is your favorite dairy related book or resource?
I have to say, you know, I've listened to this podcast before and there's been a lot of good books. But honestly, I am more of a podcaster. I do a ton of podcasting. I think that the industry is really changing and you know, everything, markets and world news and everything just seems like it's changing so much quicker that I really look for podcasts to get those early tidbits of things that are coming out or a little snapshots and maybe some exciting research or this or that. And then, you know, from there I can go investigate more if there's a paper published or if there's a conference or where I can find out more about what's coming. But I tend to do a lot more podcasts. And the nice thing too is you can play them while you're doing whatever during your day or if you've got some drive time and things like that. So I try to maximize my time that way as well.
It's really easy to multitask in a podcast, right? Like if you're doing something that you don't have to pay too much attention to, that just put a podcast on in the background and, you know, doing the dishes or whatever else. Yep. I'm with you on that one.
Yep.
So is it the same answer then for your favorite non-dairy related book or resource, or do you have other recommendations?
Yeah, that's probably the same. I guess I tend to get a little busy and so I get half into a book and it seems like then I don't quite finish it because I got pulled in some direction. So yeah, most likely yep. It's going to be podcasts. But I would say if we could maybe pivot that question, what podcast maybe am I listening to? I try to do different sorts. So like this one, Peggy Cuffin's Up Level Dairy is fantastic. The Dairy Science Digest is good. There's some good like dairy market ones that I really look for. And on some podcasts, like I always try to get High Ground's dairy market report, like right after it's out on Up Level Dairy, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I also try to listen to maybe some podcasts. Huberman Lab is one of my top favorites. I really enjoy like science research on as it relates to health, even though it is human health, but it always makes me wonder how we can translate some things, right? That's the vet in me. But, and then tech, there's some great podcasts like, talking about egg tech and just trying to keep abreast of what's coming. And if there's different ways we can incorporate tech into our dairy.
Yeah. Great list. I should take note of some of those. I feel like I'll have a bunch of podcasts in my feed and then I'll go through like a podcast slump. And I feel like I'm just now getting over a podcast slump. So I should look into some of those. So, and yes, Peggy's podcast, of course, our podcast, fantastic, mm-hmm. but Peggy's, everything Peggy does, I'm a big fan of, so.
Likewise.
All right. So our last question is, what do you think sets successful dairy professionals apart from those that are not successful?
I think it's constant striving to be better, always working to be better. So we do that on our dairy. I try to tell that to my team and everybody that works on our dairy, like, how can we be better today than we were tomorrow? Like, what's one thing we can do today to be better than tomorrow? Striving to be better. And in that, like, also, I love this quote from Rick Rubin, but meaningful innovation comes from being open, aware, and willing to envision what does not yet exist.
Yes.
So oftentimes, I think on dairies, we get stuck doing things because that's the way that we've always done them. So is there something we're doing? Do we need to do that? And I try to think of a lot of the really, really basic things too, you know, like, do we have to, why are we doing things this way? Do they have to be done this way? And just keeping that in the back of your mind, you know, not always getting set in that, you know? So yeah, like, you know, pen moves, you know, thinking of getting rid of pen moves. Well, cows always have to go to a breeding pen and then they have to go to a pregnant pen and really, do they on our dairy? And you think of it in the sense of your dairy. So like for us on our dairy, do they have to do that?
Yeah.
No, they don't. And how much time are we spending moving cows? And what's the ramifications of the social reorganization? So trying to keep things like that in mind. So being better and what are we doing, what we should be doing, not because we've always done it that way.
I really like that. I feel like everyone hates being told we just do that because we've always, like, we always have a visceral reaction. Well, that's just how we've always done it. Like, nobody likes to be told that, but how often do we have, like, internalized without even thinking about it?
Yes.
Oh, that's just how I've always done it. Uh-huh. Instead of actually questioning, could I do this differently? Why would I, like, why am I doing it like this? I really like that perspective.
Yeah. And that's why I love having, like, new people or new team members, you know, I always try to get them to be like, okay, this is the goal. Like, how would you do it? Or, cause oftentimes somebody with a different perspective than me will say like, let's try it like this. And I've never even thought of that.
Yes. Yes. Well, with that, I think that brings us to the end of our conversation. I really enjoyed the opportunity to chat with you today. Hopefully our listeners enjoy it as well. So, yeah, thank you very much for your time. And thank you for those of you who stuck around to listen.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me. It was fun. And I hope somebody takes away some sort of tidbit that makes them dairy or helps them out. And if that happens, then this was a success.
I'm sure they will.
All right. Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.